Support comes from Ohio University's Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service, a proud member of Ohio University's Health Collaborative, with the Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine and the College of Health Sciences and Professions. We are partnering with local providers and communities to improve public health. Information is available at ohio.edu/Voinovich-school.
Hey everyone, this is Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones, author of Think Like an Entrepreneur, Act Like a CEO. And our topic today is managing your projects like a CEO, even if you don't know where to begin. Our guest is Corey Kogan. She's the Vice President of Content at Franklin Covey, which is a leading research and consulting firm on issues related to leadership and productivity. Corey is also a best-selling author and media expert, and she writes about how to create a culture of confidence and success, and how to get things done. Today, Corey will tell us about her recent book, which is an updated, easy-to-read edition of Project Management for the Unofficial Project Manager. She understands that some of the time, we all have to grapple with projects. Corey will explain why some projects are not as successful as they could be. And she will give us practical suggestions about how to create and manage projects that do succeed. Corey, it's so nice to have a chance to talk with you about your great book here. I'm very excited to get started. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Bev, so much for having me. It's a topic I love to discuss. So I'm all ready for you.
Well, I'm obsessed about how to do projects. So I feel like, you know, I've come to the mountain getting your advice. But before we dig into your book, and the book is Project Management for the Unofficial Project Manager. Before we dig into all of that, here on Jazzed About Work, we always like to get a sense of who our guests are, and we love career stories. So could you tell us a little bit about your own career path and how you became an expert with this incredible company that knows so much about leadership and about productivity?
Sure, and thank you for asking. So, I've been around for a while in executive leadership for many years. But, you know, I always like to say I don't have a PhD. I don't have a master's. I like to say on the streets of New York and went to school there and very, you know, quickly got into the business world at a television station in New York City and then left for Pennsylvania and it's actually in the Pocono Mountains, selling real estate, and sales became something. My dad was a salesman and I became something that was, you know, I was pretty good at. And then people asked me to train salespeople. And from there, I ended up at Alpha Graphics, which is a global franchise organization. And long story short, was doing a lot of the training design for them and ended up as the executive vice president of worldwide operations for them over time and was with them for many, many years until we were a Franklin Covey company, actually. We believed in, you know, the principles of the seven habits and our management work and ultimately ended up working at Franklin Covey and in many positions for them and currently and the vice president of content development for Franklin Covey. So that's why I say, you know, I grew up on the streets of New York. I sort of learned by fire and my DNA from my career with Franklin Covey is I bring, a lot of business experience to the principles that we have at Franklin Covey. So for me, like the book, you get the real story combined with principles for real life things that you can do to be better at both productivity and leadership.
This explains why we're so much into hearing the career story of our guests, because it almost never is like people imagine, that you go to graduate school and you study X and then you become an expert in X. I think all of the people who really are great at topics like leadership and management, and in my experience, have been people who've done the work and who've bounced around a little bit and who've learned how to spot opportunity. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. I, of course, have been an executive as well as a lawyer, and then I went on to become an executive coach. So to me, some of the early work of the organization is really been helpful. And Franklin Covey, to me, is like a stellar brand, but not everybody might know about what you do. Would you talk a little bit about the research and how you've gotten this, how the organization has become such a leader in understanding about creating effective cultures?
Yes, and thank you for asking that. You know, I know a lot of people are like, oh, Franklin Covey, and I mentioned Seven Habits, you know, my parents read that, or The Planner, you know, that was a long time ago. And those two things, we sold off the Planner division many years ago, but the Seven Habits and the, you know, the planning system were actually the springboard to who Franklin Covey is today, which is one of the largest and most trusted leadership companies in the world. And we serve in 160 countries. And we've actually touched the lives of about 30 million leaders, and we consider individual contributors leaders as well. And so we have a lot of experience with a lot of organizations around the world, and really operate to help, you know, intentionally develop leaders across all levels. Infuse and supply every individual with the tools of effectiveness, like project management and social emotional intelligence and communication skills, etc. And, you know, building a very inclusive culture of trust and being able to execute on results. And that's where our focus is. And Franklin Covey, we take large groups of people in organizations and help them achieve desired results. By implementing and getting to actual behavior change. So we always like to say, you know, we're not about, hey, you know, you just watch a video and suddenly you have a great culture. You know, it really takes work. And that's Franklin Covey's niche. And we're actually a publicly held company. You can find us on the stock exchange doing, and, you know, knock on wood, we do really well and have really infused timeless principles, like I said, with practical businesses around the world to really help them get better and build cultures that are going to survive today and in the future in this new world we live in. So thank you for asking.
Well, I know it's a highly regarded organization and it's had a big impact on lots of organizations, but I think some of the basics are really for the ordinary person. And that's what I love so much about your book on the unofficial project manager. Now, my husband and I kind of not only run our professional lives, but we run our lives by thinking of projects. If somebody has a big health challenge, or if we're doing a family event, or whatever it is, we sit down and say, all right, what's our project here? And I think that we found that if somebody has, you know, a little touch of cancer or something like that, it can be very scary. But as soon as you sit down and you say, all right, what's our goal? What do we have to manage? How are we going to do this? It you get a little distance from it and some perspective, and life seems much more manageable, and it's easier to be optimistic. So I'm a big believer in running your life and not just your professional career by breaking things into projects. But let's go to your book. What are you thinking about with unofficial project managers? by unofficial, I assume we're talking about anybody who's not the boss of something, right?
Well, so your explanation of in your personal life is really part of this story. So I'm going to come back to how that connects. But in particularly in business, we don't realize, in the business world, whether you're a small business or a large business or even a solo entrepreneur, it doesn't matter. We in today's world have slipped into this world of unofficial project management. Why? Because we've really, the world today is filled with us as knowledge workers, meaning we're generally paid to think, to innovate, to create and execute. So people don't realize, people like myself and like don't realize that we have become project managers, even though that's not in our title. Because, and particularly with the pandemic, there was so much that changed. We needed new systems and new everything. And so a project is something with a beginning and an end to serve a purpose. And so we've slipped into this role and people are, don't realize it. I like to call myself a scarred unofficial project manager because like so many people through my career, so even going back into what I was saying about Alpha Graphics, I was asked to implement ISO 9000 globally, and I did. But I remember my CEO, who I reported to, saying, "Corey, are you sure you don't need a consultant? You don't need some help?" He said, "You're going to reach a point where you're going to get crushed. Everything's." I'm like, "No, I can do it." And I pushed my way through. Uh-huh. And sure enough, towards the as we were getting into that project, I started to, to die on the vine with the project. And I did get help. And it was a big lesson learned that we are unofficial project managers and pretty talented people. And so we push through, but that there are things that we can do to make the journey easier. So I always say to people, think about your day-to-day work and how much of your work has a beginning and an end to it. Because you are an unofficial project manager, because it's usually 70-80% of our day. And once we realize we're unofficial project managers, and what the book does is give, as distill some of the, very technical project management, things out there for official project managers, and distills it down so that we can do have a process to do, projects. Last comment, to circle back to what you said, we intuitively know how to do projects. So when we do have a dinner to plan or a wedding, generally we know, let's sit down, let's scope the project, let's plan it out. And we know when the turkey needs to go in the oven and we know when the potatoes need to go in so they both come out at the same time. And those are very deep project management skills that once realized can be replicated and make an unofficial project manager's life much easier, both at home and at work.
I think that sometimes people intuitively can undertake a project, something that they normally do at work. But when something comes along that's new or different because they don't have enough experience for an intuitive path, they don't always know how to pause and shape a challenge or an opportunity into a project. So we know a project does have a beginning and an end, but what are the basics of, if you're sitting down to help somebody turn a big challenge into a project, what are the basics that you're going to look at as you're getting started?
Well, the first thing is, it sort of goes to the process itself. Like what is it that you want to accomplish? I actually, my life is filled with, I do major big projects for Franklin Covey, developing content and, launching things worldwide and all of that. And right now, actually, in a situation where somebody wants something and everybody is like jumping on, okay, well, we need to do this. And I'm like, okay, wait, we need to step back and really understand, again, it all is in the diagnosis up front, and really of what is the, the value that we are going for in, you know, around this project. Like, why are we doing it? What value is it going to bring? And what desired results do we want? That is number one, because so many projects are done out there. There's all kinds of statistics about doing projects that end up not bringing the value that was intended in the first place, or it never should have been done in the first place, or it never gets finished. I mean, there's a lot around that. So the first thing somebody's sitting down is like, what are we trying to accomplish here? What's the big end in mind on it? And then what are the desired results and the goals, if you will, to get there? So if we're planning a big event for a company, okay, great, but why are we doing it? What do we want to accomplish? That's the start of any project.
So you have a model, which is, I think, really simple and helpful. It looks at the process of creating and pursuing a project by looking at things in five phases. The first one is scope, I think. And it sounded to me like what you were just describing is the scoping process is sitting down and figuring out, what do we need? What are we going to produce? You know, where do we want to go? That's the first phase, right?
It is foundational, and you cannot pass go unless you do a really good job at scoping. And in the book and in our workshops, you know, we give guidance to say, yeah, and we say, you know, the book and our workshops are not about training people to fill out forms. It is about giving guidance. I like to call them thinking tools, to say, here's the questions that you need to ask. So yeah, it is, you need to scope it really well to get to everybody's on the same page with what clear outcomes are, who the key stakeholders are. And one of my favorite things in scoping is, what are we not including, so that we squeeze out any assumptions, you know, around what we think this project is. So there's a lot that goes into scoping, but we call it front loading. You got to do a great job there before you go anyplace else.
Yes. And I'm thinking of many, many meetings in which somebody is presenting a project and encouraging discussion about it. And the people get excited and they want to do this and that and all kinds of other things. So it really is important to narrow the scope. And that's a basic. So that's the first phase of any project organization. And the next one is, you make a plan. Is that right?
Yes. And I also want to point out that, you know, we always, and this is a signature Franklin Covey, have a mindset that we start with before we get into how to execute or how to, you know, behaviorally do something. And the mindset for this is value plus process plus people equals success. So I just want to say, with the value piece, which I mentioned earlier, is really important. And in this day, we, you know, when we talk about agile project management, this is a very big movement to really keep value top of mind. So even though we're scoping the project and we're like, okay, this is it, one of the things that we want to do, particularly as we move into planning and beyond, is make sure that we're always checking in that we are delivering value without getting to scope creep. So just an important piece there. What we call, and this is in the planning stage, is having feedback loops along the way as part of planning, so that we are always checking in. So even if I'm putting together a training program, even though we know where we want to go, you know, along the way doing check-ins, because the world changes every day, you know, things change, we want to always make sure that we're getting to value sooner than later. So there's that.
So the plan are your action items, but that includes your feedback and, you know, staying on the path. Is that right? That's the plan, includes identifying how you're going to keep track of things.
Yeah, well, there's really two key pieces. We say a risk management strategy and the infamous project plan. So this is what scares people the most, because when you know you say, all right, you need a Gantt chart, everybody, you know, trembles in fear. And actually, in plan, so a lot of people use things like Excel, whatever you use. The interesting thing is when you learn a couple of the project management principles in planning, like how dependencies work together and what the difference between work hours and duration, we don't need to go into it here, but they're actually mind-blowing. People say, Corey, get a life. You get so excited about this. They're mind-blowing time management principles. So work hour, just to give you an example, is, you know, the boss says, well, Corey, how long would it take you to get this list together of, you know, whatever? And I say, oh, it would take me a couple hours. But in the meantime, I need other people to help me. I need to do some research. And the duration of actually completing that is 3 days, because I can only do less than an hour a day to commit to working on that. And so when you're planning and planning duration, it's very different and helps people not get bogged down or overwhelmed in their work. All of that is inputted into a Gantt chart, which people don't really understand, and really shows them what the timeline will look like and what they can do realistically, because most people are not just working on one project, they're working on multiple projects. So I always recommend, if you're an Excel user or an Outlook user, you know, give it a try for one of the, programs that have project management principles in it. You'd be amazed at how it helps you plan. And that's the goal of the book, is not to, and our workshops, is not to make people experts in Gantt charts, but just to give confidence, to give it a try, to make, even if it is for a, you know, holiday dinner at home, give it a try. It's amazing how much easier your life will be.
All right. So let's say we have done a good job of scoping, and we know what we're trying to do, and we've got a plan in place and it's charted out and we're ready to really dig in. What's the next phase?
The next one is engage. And this is a really sort of the heart and soul of project management today, because there's some people that work on projects solo, but for the most part, we're saying project managers, it's not just the project, the people, sort of going back to the mindset, value plus people plus process, it is about leading people, whether we chose to be in leadership or not, because there's a lot of people in business that decided not to be in leadership, and they ended up managing projects and ended up leading people anyway. And so the engage piece is, I've got my, like you said, I've got my scope, I got my plan. Well, now I need to engage with the people in a way that invites them to want to play on my team and wants to give their best to it. Because in today's world, whether it's project management, or official leadership, if you will, you can't beat people up to get work done. People today need to be led in a way where they're going to volunteer their best efforts. So we have these, we didn't want to do a whole leader, you know, so much leadership development out there, including at Franklin Covey, but for project management, like, what's the minimum work that will help people get there? And we have what we call the 5 behaviors that comes from the 13 behaviors of high trust that Stephen M. R. Covey is the expert in. And so we say, listen, if you can demonstrate respect, listen first, clarify expectations, extend trust to people, and practice accountability, both in yourself as a model and hold people accountable respectfully, that you will go a long way in engaging people to really want to get the work done. Because that's the way of the world now. And if you know anything about quiet quitting or all the things that's going on out there, a lot of people are showing up at work and just giving enough to not lose their job. And a real leader and the competitive edge is when we can lead in a way where people really want to work for you and really want to get the work done.
I totally agree that engaging other people is so important. And it's working with clients. One thing I see a lot when people maybe have a new job, or very often an organization brings in a coach when somebody's gotten a big promotion and they're leading in a way they never mm-hmm. have before. Mm-hmm. What happens? The person knows the technology, they know the business, they have some ideas, they come in and they want to have some immediate successes. And so they jump into a project and wanting to as quickly as possible have some results, and they neglect to even identify who might be impacted by this. They want to have produce something, and instead of talking and listening with the people who might have something to say about it, they find themselves in a fight before they've really begun. So the engaging the people, I think, is just such an important thing. But it's also kind of looking at the stakeholders, isn't it? Even the people who may not be engaged in the action might have an impact on the output, right? That you want to know who all of the stakeholders are.
Yeah, and that goes back even into and by the way, your role as an executive coach, you know, I'm speaking to the choir on this idea of how people need to behave, and just in your role, you know, the transition of with executive coaching, the transition of moving into a different leadership role or a new role at a new company, it's just really key, you know. So I'm sure you do great work around holding people back from jumping so fast mm-hmm. before building some of those relationships and really understanding people's potential, you know, and stuff like that. So it's very consistent, you know, across the board here. The key stakeholders goes back into scoping. So it is one of the first things that needs to happen is to say, all right, before we do anything, let's identify all of the possible stakeholders. And it's a brainstorm session, and you should go crazy with it. Like, who possibly is touched by this, so that you don't miss anybody?
Exactly.
Because, you know, I think a lot of people know the pain of you're into, and it's happened to me. And again, by the way, I like to call myself a laboratory rat. You know, some people say I'm a subject uh-huh. matter expert on this. I'm a laboratory rat. I do this stuff every day, and I learn. I'm blessed to be able to teach this and write some of this, but I really am very self-reflective about my own mistakes along the way. And recently was on something where, sure enough, somebody came by a couple of months into the project and said, well, wait a minute, what about us? And now the project is stopped because we didn't do a good enough job up front identifying stakeholders, and ultimately out of that group, the key stakeholders. And so all of them. And there's some obvious key stakeholders. They're the signers. They're we call it the key stakeholder dance, so you can remember it. Who are the decision makers? Uh-huh. Who has the authority? Who has the need? But then there's others that aren't signers that have enormous influence that, you know, needs to be brought to the table too. And we need to identify those. And a lot of times those are the ones that get missed. So before we even start scoping, that's key, is to make sure we identify the key stakeholders. And one more thing I'll say about that. A lot of times the other one we'll ignore is those that may have a negative attitude, right? It's like, oh, I don't, you know, that project. And we sort of want to like, just get away, you know, from me. And in this day and age, we want to be inclusive, number one. But number two, their input is really important. And there are other key stakeholders who bring a lot of good influence and energy to be able to offset some of that. So just those, the influencers, both positive and negative, are really the Achilles heel for some project managers that they don't realize should be brought to the table as well. But all of that before we start scoping.
All right. So let's say we've done a great job of scoping. We've come up with a plan. We've got people on board. Then the next phase is one where I see a lot of stumbling. And that is, you got to track, you've got to measure, you've got to get the information and then make some changes sometimes. So that fourth phase, I think, is sometimes where people kind of lose their energy and things can get kind of off track. You want to tell us about the fourth phase there?
Yeah. And when people see the model, you'll see that that one surrounds all of it and there's openings along the way. And this is a real nod to, you know, to
Corey, you've muted.
Okay, am I there now?
Yes, you're back. I'm not, let's see, just, I think, go back.
I can start answering. I heard your question.
Yeah. Why don't you just start over? You've heard my kind of long introduction to the question. If you don't mind, just start over, because it took me a second to realize that you had muted. I thought maybe the problem was at my end.
No, my computer went black, and so I clicked it back on, but that's what happened.
Okay.
I don't know. So, time down. Okay.
No problem. Just tell us about phase four.
So with Track and Adapt, when people actually see the model, what you're going to see is that it surrounds the other steps, and there's spaces along the way, because this is where, what we talked about earlier, where we want to be agile, and where the feedback loops come into play. So along the way, we want to get to value, and we want to make sure we're checking in with these feedback loops. The tracking part will be done by whatever our project plan is, and we want to, you know, there's going to be, we like to call it reactive changes and proactive changes. So for an example, in one of our stories, in the book, or in the workshop, an event gets, you know, they had an event scheduled and then something happened where they had to move the event. So everybody sort of went crazy, but it was a reactive change. And we have to know how to deal with that and with our team. How do we keep everybody engaged to make that change? And then sort of what I was saying, Track and Adapt is about proactive change too. What do we need to do to make sure, and what adjustments do we need to make that's going to get us to the value and the outcomes we wanted to get to in the scope? The last piece of this is also communication, project status, making sure that we're communicating well with the key stakeholders and others so they know where the project stands, you know, what's going on, what are the, you know, how are we handling risks? So everybody's calm, cool, and collected and knows that we're headed in the right direction. So it's a real nod to the agile project management world now, to make sure that we're getting to the valued outcome before we sign off on the project, instead of releasing a project and finding a million problems after it's done.
So now we're at the end, and I love one part of the fifth phase, because I really believe in it, and a lot of people sometimes neglect it, just maybe because they're exhausted at the end. And that's kind of, you close it up, but you celebrate, you make a big deal, you give some positive reinforcement, even if it's just to yourself, when something goes well. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, close, people will smile, because a lot of times, you know, one of the biggest problems with project management is the projects that never end, right? So if we're doing all the steps that we've already talked about, they will end and, you know, and get to the finish. So the close helps make sure, first of all, that we've checked all the boxes on really officially finishing and closing the project. But, you know, this is, remember what I said about being a laboratory rat. I know when my project managers, when I get the email like, okay, we're having a closing meeting on the project, I roll my eyes for a moment, like, oh gosh, we really need to do it because I'm busy. We're on to the next thing. And then every time we do the meet, you know, do it, I am reminded about how important it is because the team is there, the key stakeholders are there, and celebration and recognition is so important to particularly the people who worked on the project. It's really important to take the time to do it because it's going to give them, remember what we said about engage, they're going to be like, oh, wow, I got recognized and I'm ready for the next project. So it's a real psychological boost. And it gives us an opportunity to do what's called a retrospective, which is lessons learned. Like, what did we get right? And what can we do better next time? And the real indicator that somebody is on board and ready for the next project is when they say, oh, you know what? The catering didn't go as well as I wanted. But boy, the next time we're going to get them. So you know they're ready to go. So close, you know, is just key. Even though we're pressed for time, it is a critical part of the project management process.
So the close and the celebration of one project can really be setting up the next project. And it's also an opportunity to acknowledge, you know, all kinds of good things that people have done. And that's really important. Well, I just looked at the clock. This has gone so fast, but I have one final question I'd like to ask you, if you're willing here. And that is, I think this really is a good book for people who are not familiar with a lot of leadership and things like that. It's simply written and it's pretty explicit. But let's say there's somebody out there doesn't have time to buy the book today because they've just agreed to do some kind of project. Maybe they're going to be the chairman of an event for a nonprofit opportunity, or maybe something broke in the house and they have to make a lot of changes quickly. Do you have any quick tips for people who are out there who have a challenge and don't know where to begin? How can you turn a challenge into a project if you're sitting there at your kitchen table not knowing what to do?
Get a piece of paper and a pen. And or, you know, or your computer, whatever you like to, you know, where you think best, and begin with the end in mind, like, and work backwards. We call that, you know, work backwards to say, okay, and again, it could be a dinner, you know, or what, like you said, we have a challenge, God forbid, it's somebody who's ill, and how do we, you know, how are we going to do all of that? But what is it? What does the outcome look like? And go there first. And what are the steps to get, you know, what do we need to do to get there? And you can do that either looking forward or looking back. One of my colleagues was talking, you know, about an exercise that she does called backcasting, where she thinks about what the end in mind is that she wants to get to, and then talks about, like, makes believe that she's in that position, and sort of stream of consciousness thinks about and discusses all the things it took her to get there. So to get to the holiday dinner, I'll do something joyful, right? It's like, oh my gosh, we had this great holiday dinner. The turkey was perfectly done. And the way I did that was, you know, by setting the oven, whatever it might be, but you got, however you do it, get these outcomes down and clear and just start to write in, also what are the tasks that I need to do to get there. That's the best. And if there's any key stakeholders, you need to talk to a family member or you need to talk to somebody at work, make sure it's helpful to have somebody else thinking with you as a start, even to determine who are other key stakeholders that need to be involved in it. That's the simplest way to start.
I totally agree. Yeah. And I'll add one thing. And that is sometimes you've made your plan sort of, and you know what you want to have out of it, but it's hard to come up with all the steps. It's hard to kind of identify all those things in the beginning. The main thing when you're sitting there at your kitchen table and you kind of identified what you want to do is identify the first steps and get moving. And as soon as you start acting on the plan, then the other steps are going to become more clear. So you don't have to get it all done today. That's my
there's
view.
No way,
not in the book.
Right. Yeah, there's no way you can, but you're right. Get an end in mind, start. You don't feel like you need to do everything, get everything, because perfection can equal paralysis too. So you do want to get going, and that'll help reveal some of the other things. It's a great point.
Thank you so much, Corey, for sharing all this with us. I'm just going to repeat the title of the book because I'm sure some people want to go out and get it or download it or whatever. It's Project Management for the Unofficial Project Manager. And Corey Kogan is the author, and I think it's a wonderful book for people who are struggling with getting things done. So thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Bev. It's been a wonderful talking with you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Today, we've been talking with Corey Kogan about how to make your projects more successful. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that you can make a project go more smoothly if you keep in mind your goals and your plan. If you notice other people who might be impacted, and if you track your progress. Thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed today's show, please let your friends know about us.